Welcome to the Work Science Center podcast, brought to you by the Work Science Center of the Georgia Institute of Technology. I'm your host, Keaton Fletcher. You can find more about the Work Science Center at our website, www.worksciencecenter.gatech.edu. In today's podcast, I speak with Devin O'Connor, founder of The Grow Group, a nonprofit organization located in Tampa, Florida, that provides training and facilitates meaningful employment for individuals with disabilities. Devin and I discuss ways to better incorporate individuals with disabilities in the modern workforce and how the science and practice of management can better include this underrepresented population. All right, thanks, Devin, for joining me today. Just to start off with, can you tell me a little bit about your background and the Grow Group?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you having me today, Keaton. So basically, throughout my life, I've always worked or volunteered with individuals with cognitive and developmental disabilities or limitations. When I was younger, my grandma started an organization called the Grow Group, G-R-O Group, in Tarpon Springs, which is Pinellas County, Florida. And basically, the intention of this nonprofit was to assist these adults with developmental disabilities in learning how to grow their own produce and basically, in her words, have some pocket change. So when I was working with them, a lot of times what we would do, in addition to like crafts and puzzles and just things to kind of keep them entertained and engaged, is go out into the garden and teach them how to grow. So fast forward, I don't know, maybe 20 years, when I was kind of doing some soul searching and trying to figure out how to incorporate my background and degree in business, and then just kind of my internal desire to assist and help and do good in the world, I created the Grow Group, which is G-R-O-W Group, and we are a nonprofit organization and a social enterprise that works with any individual with any disability in providing them workforce development and training, and then also direct job placement.
So roughly how many people have you served? Are you serving? How many people work for you?
Okay, so we've experienced kind of exponential growth over the last year or two, but right now, I think last count was 23 people working with us. I think over the last 8.5 years, we've probably placed around between 1,000 to 1,500 people in employment. And then I'd guess we've trained at least 4 to 5,000 people. At any given time now, we're currently working with somewhere between 150 and 250 people. So our caseload, we've got, usually we try to have about 20 clients per job coach or employment specialist as their main caseload, and then auxiliary services, obviously they can add some additional clients and services onto.
Okay, walk me through what it would look like from a client's perspective, from the start to the finish.
Okay, a client is, by the time we receive them, they've put in an application with the Department of Education. And in our state, Florida, and also Georgia, it's through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. So once they have an application, they're assigned a VR counselor. They have to prove some sort of disability in order to qualify, and then they begin building their case. And so a case can be anything from helping them to support them in schooling, like training, or sometimes even a bachelor's, depending on if they have the aptitude and interests and grades and dedication or history of dedication to go and support that. It could be receiving mental health counseling and rehabilitation. It could be just modifying a vehicle if somebody has a spinal cord injury and they just need transportation. They already have a job. So vocational rehabilitation is responsible for kind of removing any initial barriers to an individual's potential to become employed. And then that's where we would come in. So we then receive the referral. In Florida, it's through ARIBA, which is an electronic system where we get the referral and any supporting documents about the individual. And then we schedule an intake to meet with them and collect additional information that we feel like is important for us to do the best job that we possibly can in finding them a position that they're interested in. And then from a day-to-day basis, it's ultimately our client's responsibility to obtain employment. And so we let them know from the beginning that we're not here to basically find them a job and wish them luck. We're here to give them the skills and the tool set they need in order to do this for the rest of their lives. And so we spend a lot of time up front on a daily basis, or we're meeting with them really on a weekly basis for a couple hours a week. And from the beginning, it's the intake. Usually our second meeting is cover letter and resume writing. Our third meeting will be like interview preparation. And then usually by the fourth meeting, we're starting to put a plan together, an individualized career plan, where we can then go out and start to communicate with employers about the individual's interests and also communicate with the individual about the best way for them to go out and kind of communicate on their own, or we'll take them and job develop with them on their behalf so they can see what that looks like. So after the fourth meeting, it really just depends on the person, their interests, their job goal, or the industry they're interested in, and then any limitations that they might have. A huge barrier for us, kind of across the board, or I'd say two barriers, is the first is competence. So just knowing that we believe in them and we feel like they are at a point in their life where they're able to do, you know, this, they're able to find employment. And then the other common thread is usually transportation. So there's always some sort of lack of transportation, either in an urban or suburban area or in a rural area where either the bus doesn't take them where they need to go and they live outside of the bus lines, or they have a family member that they're relying on to use a car, or they don't have the funds to pay for insurance or a driver's license. So transportation is usually a challenge as well. But in general, every person's process looks a little different. We are meeting with them on a weekly basis to provide as much support as possible. And then it just kind of goes from there based on their individual needs.
So you're providing training and skill development on the getting the job part. Do you have any role in basically the skills they need once they're on the job?
Yeah, we do. So it's our responsibility to not only understand the position that they're hired for and oftentimes help them get that position, but then once they're hired, depending on the type of referral. So in Florida and throughout really the country, there's kind of two different types of referrals. One would be more of an employment service referral where the individual just needs kind of that upfront support and assistance. And then once they get the job, there is some sort of understanding that most likely they're not going to require a lot of help keeping the job. It's just removing those initial barriers. And then there's also supported employment referral, which the individual has more significant limitations, or maybe they have a dual diagnosis with more than one limitation or disability. And so the expectation there is that once we place them in the job goal that they're interested in, that we're going to continue to support them, help them understand what the employer's expectations are and how we can assist them and support them with producing and making sure that they clearly understand how to do the job. And usually that's longer term support. So when we stabilize a person, we have some sort of indicator that they have been successful in the position and are capable of performing every function of the job. And so from that point, we stabilize them and then we follow them for the next 6 months to ensure that they are truly successful while we start to phase out and create a plan where we can start to build natural supports on their job, like family members or coworkers or a supervisor who, if there is an issue, instead of them relying on us, they can then kind of in a more natural setting, go to that coworker or that family member or whoever else would be in their lives to support them from that point moving forward.
So you have to wear so many different hats. And I imagine like every job that you place people into, they face different challenges, and probably each client, based on their different disabilities, also faces different challenges. How do you go about matching people to jobs?
That's part of the process with vocational rehabilitation, where they'll do a vocational assessment and a psychological evaluation or assessment and start to identify some transferable skills or an industry that the person has been successful in the past. Or if they have an aptitude, maybe we'll do like a career scope assessment to gain a better understanding of some of the other industries that they could transfer some of those skills to if they're not able to go return back to work or the position they were previously in. And we do that part too, to be honest. We actually do administer vocational evaluations and assessments. We do all of those services as well. But if we didn't, then we'll receive that report and we'll have clearly identified at least one job goal based on that person's interests, ability, education, experience, et cetera. And then we'll, from that point moving forward, start to pursue it, kind of using that as our plan. Then we'll start to go out and job develop and create relationships or reach back out to existing relationships within that industry where they typically hire that specific job goal. And then we'll try to kind of bridge that gap and assist them with finding employment through those pipelines.
You're still working with them for the following 6 months to make sure that your clients are successful while they're on the job. How do you do that?
A couple things I've noticed that, like, as an individual, so we call them employment specialists. Other people might call them job coaches. There's a lot of different terms for the position that we have. But as you kind of gain tenure in this role, you start to learn different industries as you go. One thing that we look for from our hiring practice is someone who has worked in a few industries and has an understanding of multiple industries rather than just kind of one focus. And I think that that helps from an adaptability perspective for the job coach or the employment specialist, to adapt to some of the industries that they have experience in so that they can then coach their clients within those industries while they start to learn and tack on new industries. So with each person we're placing, like literally my day can consist of working with a person who is a bagger at a grocery store, all the way up to like a nurse practitioner or a person with three PhDs who's attempting to get a job at the FDA as an engineer. So not only is every client completely different and the level of support completely different, but the scope varies greatly. And there are organizations that focus specifically on individuals within a specific disability, like that population. But as an organization, we feel like it's important to represent anyone with a disability because they are so different, even within those specific populations, that to classify or categorize, we're doing that person an injustice by not really getting to know them and placing the disability before the person. So that was a really roundabout way of saying that we meet with the individual, we provide the service based on the individual, and then we'll go in. And if we don't already know the industry or the job, we'll go in and learn it with them so that we can support them on the job.
Are some companies more or less willing to work with you and to work with your clients? And have you noticed that there's certain attitudes?
There are definitely organizations and industries that are not as open. I think a challenge for us is raising more awareness about what disability looks like or doesn't look like, and kind of educating and informing employers about any preconceived notions that they might have. We usually like to crush those or destroy that idea of what disability means. And so if an employer has either had a bad experience working or hiring a person with a disability, or maybe they know someone who has a disability, automatically when they hear the word disability, they're moving that person where they had a bad experience into this potential applicant's place. And so we often have to just kind of demystify or dispel that first, create a relationship based around either the person's capabilities and experience or the employer's needs, and then bridge that. Some of the industries that we work with more often than not are like in an office setting, medical setting, hospitality, like hotel and restaurant. We do a lot of maintenance. We do a lot of customer service, education, people who are interested in working with kids or adults. Virtually any industry that a person can work in, we're working with a client, but there are some common threads. We do see some jobs being identified as a job goal more frequently than others. And so those are the easier cases for us to work with because we've already paved the way and created those relationships. The challenge for us is when we get someone who's interested in graphic design and we haven't worked with a company in a while for graphic design, or drafting, or that person with three PhDs who wants to work at the FDA and we've never worked with the FDA before. So that kind of forces us to step outside of our normal role and really learn about the industry and the position so that we can overcome any barriers that the employer might put in the way.
Have you noticed cultures with coworkers or customers clients would be working with that are either helpful, where people are going to be more likely to succeed in the organization, or not helpful, make it really difficult to keep people in organizations and successful?
Yes, we do. Both. So we notice that if a company is newer, if it's a smaller mom and pop company, or if it's a relatively new kind of fledgling company, there's much less bureaucratic red tape and much more of an openness to the unknown, because I think as an organization, they're experiencing unknown on a day-to-day basis. And so throwing in the idea of hiring an individual with a disability, they see as a potential opportunity. Some of the older organizations, from the perspective of if they've been around a long time, if they've really formalized their process, if they've created a lot of layers within human resources or within their hiring practice, those are the biggest challenges, because even if you identify a person who's open to hiring an individual with a disability, you're still going to run into barriers along the way as it kind of moves up the hiring rank. And so from an organizational cultural perspective, we're finding that, and I know this is not politically correct, but younger organizations are more open-minded and more open to hiring individuals with disabilities, because there's not 20 or 30 years of kind of this preconceived idea of an individual with a disability. Their only chance of working is in like an adult day training center doing piecework, which was the norm 30 years ago. You know, disability is relatively a new thing in the workforce. And so a lot of people are coming with preconceived notions if they've been in the workforce for a long time. But if they haven't, we're seeing that they're a lot more open to hiring these individuals and working with us.
So have you seen that shift over just your time with the Grow Group, that it's been easier, I guess, for lack of a better term, to place people?
Yeah, I have. And I kind of reached out in anticipating, you know, this interview with you to see if that was the experience for some of our other job coaches. And even ones who have been around for only a couple of years have said that they feel like we're progressively moving in a really positive and productive direction where people are being, they are more open and organizations are more open and small mom and pop places are more open to hiring individuals with disabilities, but not only just hiring them, but also like really giving them an honest attempt to ensure their success. And so hiring them is one thing because there's tax incentives and there's, you know, just that overall feeling that you're doing someone a favor, which we see sometimes, but to actually truly have a place for them within your company and to train them and to meet them where they're at and to kind of have an understanding of what their limitations are, but really honor their strengths and all of their abilities is definitely something that all of our job coaches are experiencing more and more over the last couple of years. As compared to when I first started it only 8 years ago, I think that there was a lot of barriers that employers were putting in the way that were making it more challenging.
So what would you say now are the biggest challenges you face moving forward?
I think one of the largest ones right now, there's a couple, but one is kind of interagency or inter-organization collaboration. So like right now we're a nonprofit or a social enterprise and we go out and we're representing a client and the client is working with vocational rehabilitation, which is part of the Department of Education. And then overarching that is WIOA, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, I think. Which is requiring that federal agencies like Department of Labor and Department of Education and Department of Justice work together. So we're seeing this kind of challenge where there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And when we're working with government agencies, things tend to take a little longer. And so as a smaller, more agile nonprofit, we're able to move very quickly. And so we're seeing a challenge is how are we to interpret our contracts and our relationships with these government agencies and translate those into real-time, agile, and adaptable services so that we're able to serve as many people as quickly as possible, but to provide like a high-quality service. So that's one. And I don't know if that was three, but another challenge that we're seeing now is the use of online applications and assessments. And the reason that that's a challenge for the application process is if a person is not computer literate or savvy, or not just not familiar with utilizing a computer for work, they might not be able to fill out an application online, which is automatically a barrier for them for that position, no matter how qualified they are. And the other thing is the assessment process. So if an individual has any type of limitation, let's say they're on the autism spectrum and they have a really hard time understanding or interpreting a hypothetical scenario, if they've never had to do that before, how are they going to explain how they would handle that situation? But we know after working with them that they would be incredible in customer service or incredible in this specific position and in this specific scenario. I feel like the assessments are weeding individuals out that are otherwise completely capable of performing not only the essential functions of the job, but being one of the best hires the organization made. So those are two.
Yeah, two pretty big ones.
Yeah.
That last one, I feel like is, especially where your field and my field tend to overlap a lot, because we spend a lot of our time making those assessments and testing to see if they are causing adverse impact, making it more challenging for one group than another to get the jobs. But I feel like most of the times that research is focusing on men versus women or differences in race or differences in age, but very few, if many people are talking about people with disabilities. And like you'd pointed out, people with autism thinking about like hypothetical questions. And in our field, we think there's this situational judgment test, right? That hypothetical, you're in the situation. How do you handle it? We lean into those. We find them pretty effective at hiring people. And from your perspective, right, there's whole groups of people that could be cutting up who are still qualified for the job. And there's, at least from my perspective, sort of a disconnect there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I don't know what it's called. Is it called validating when you are taking a group of individuals to verify that an assessment truly works, you know, that it's evidence-based?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something that I've been thinking about a lot is just why aren't, I mean, especially if we're, I mean, we're talking, we're 2018, towards the end now, we're talking about working with and hiring individuals with disabilities, especially with the unemployment rate at what it is. I think it's like 3.9%. So this is a group of individuals who are qualified and capable. And out of them, I mean, I just looked earlier today, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 18.7% of people with disabilities are employed, compared to 65.7% of people without disabilities who are employed. And that, I don't know how accurate that is. I'm assuming it's pretty accurate if it's published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics online. But my question is that if we're scrounging to find qualified and capable individuals for some of these positions, why wouldn't we start validating some of these assessments and include individuals with disabilities to gain a better understanding of who we're filtering in and who we're filtering out? And so if they have a job coach, and that job coach, as part of the reasonable accommodation, can explain the questions on an assessment in a way that makes sense to the individual, then maybe they'll get hired. But really, what's the purpose of the assessment? I mean, we're kind of going against the intention of the assessment. So from your perspective, and maybe this is for a later time, but like, how could we start to raise awareness about including this population so that it truly represents the workforce that is available and can start filtering in these individuals instead of filtering them out?
Well, I think we're taking our first steps right now. But yeah, I think just raising awareness in the IO community of like that statistic from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's mind-blowing. That's a radical difference. And as you said, I think, you know, often the science follows, or at least that's hopefully a way that it works. And now that the economy is in such a way that we are scrounging for people for jobs, we need qualified, capable candidates that maybe we haven't thought of before, that need hopefully will push the science to explore how to do that, because we've not had to. It's very easy, I think, for us to give tests or to give computerized tests or assessments and validate those with thousands of people. And it's much harder to try to do that with a much smaller population that we haven't necessarily had to take into consideration before, but certainly worthwhile.
Keen, if you could get on that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'll do that right now. The other part of this is that there should be this crosstalk between the academics and the research and then practice. And so from your perspective, because there is, I think, a lot of overlap between IO psychology and sort of your organizational mission, where do you go for resources? Like when you're entering into maybe working with a client who wants to explore a new job market or things along those lines, kind of like, where do you search? Where do you find your resources?
Some of the resources that we get from a training perspective when we're training personnel that work for our organization are like Virginia Commonwealth University, George Washington University, some of the larger universities that specifically focus on people with disabilities and employment. And then we use askjan.org for understanding any accommodations that an individual might need in order to be successful based on their disability. We use ONET to identify employment goals and to also have a better understanding of any projections for that employment goal. So if, you know, they're increasing year over year and it's looking more and more likely that it's a great or it's promising for future positions, then we might suggest those job goals as opposed to one that is slowly starting to diminish. We also use rehabworks.org in Florida, which is put out by Department of Education and Vocational Rehabilitation, but each state has their own VR, vocational rehabilitation, and each state's website has a plethora of information and resources, both for our clients, but also for organizations like ours or providers. Indeed.com is an incredible tool for us. We have a lot of success on that website as far as being able to create a filter based on the individual's personal job search, what they need and that criteria, and then to go out and pull from different websites, you know, across the country. Indeed does a really good job of streamlining those for us so that we're able to save time and not have to go to each individual website. And then I think just plugging in locally from more of a social perspective to some advocacy groups or to different organizations that might not have an employment focus, but that are either focused on employment or focused on individuals with disabilities, and then kind of helping them connect, because a lot of times they're all looking for the same thing, but there's this glass wall where they might not communicate, but they could really help each other out.
That's an awesome list of resources. And I'm really proud that Ona is on it because, boom, IO Psychology, we're doing useful things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was us. We did that.
Well, perfect. I appreciate that then.
As we wrap things up, are there any questions that you think it would be great for us to, as IO psychologists, to look at that could help you out, answers to problems that you might have that don't exist now? Or how can we help you better do your job?
One thing would be, and you and I have talked about this before, but just kind of, is it possible to create an assessment or a tool to scan a company's culture? And if so, to specifically scan it and provide enough information for an individual, it could be anyone really, just universal design, where we are able to not only gain an understanding of the position and also go in and actually see either the brick and mortar location or the website or whatever it is, but also to have a really thorough understanding of the organization's culture and use that as kind of a triad to understand, would this person that we're working with be a good fit so that we're not setting them up for failure and so that they are thoroughly informed about many aspects or layers of the organization prior to both applying, but also to beginning employment.
I'll also get on that tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. Please work on that. I'm writing a list too. I appreciate the ONET. So that's definitely helpful. But my other question is it possible from IO psychology's perspective to start demystifying the idea around hiring and retaining individuals with disabilities? So we talked about how you guys might not even be considering that population when you're creating pre-employment assessments. And so how, aside from this podcast, how do we start to raise more awareness on the front end of hiring to really create more of a space for individuals with disabilities? Because right now there's not a lot of training and we're really relying on small organizations like ours to go out and to talk about disability and what it means and to talk about ADA and to talk about, how can you hire a person and provide a reasonable accommodation in a way that makes sense to the employer and to their business model and also doesn't create any additional work on their end. So would it be possible for IO Psychology to help us with demystifying this kind of idea of disability in the workforce?
Solid question. I don't think I can do that for you, but I'm sure someone out there can.
Fair.
Anything else you want to say on the future of work, on the role of integrating workers with disabilities into the modern workforce, things that we should know from you?
Not really. I think we covered a lot. And I just appreciate you taking the time and interest to kind of pry into this a little bit, because it sounds like it's not something that's covered a whole lot.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is definitely enlightening. And I'm sure that other IO psychologists, I think you just sparked a whole slew of research ideas. So thank you so much, Devin. And I guess as we sign off, where can people find you and the Grow Group if they want more information about what you guys do?
Thegrowgroup.org is probably the best way. I would say that has all of our information on it. And then reaching out to me personally, anyone is always welcome if they have any questions or ideas.
Excellent. Thanks, Evan.
Cool. Thank you, Keaton.